Hi, this is Karen, the city clerk. Looks like we're waiting for Cal to get connected, so he might be just a few minutes behind. Brittany, would you like to get the meeting started?
Sure. Do you want to call roll, Karen? Or do you want to skip that?
It's not required for the work session, but I think Joe Clark was going to read the vision statement.
Okay. Councilmember Clark, can you read our vision statement, please?
Yes. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions. Were you able to copy that?
Okay. Yes, thank you. I'm just trying to pull up my PDF copy of this real quick here. Okay, so we'll do approval of minutes at the general meeting, correct? I don't think there are any requests for agenda changes, so we'll go ahead and go to the committee and staff reports. So Travis, if you want to go ahead, please.
Thank you, Brittany. Not much to report right now. Just to let people know, though, that the COVID point of entry tent testing at the airport is still open. We're going to be open until the end of October. We're testing anybody that flies intrastate, and then anybody who wants to go into any remote community from Gustavus on, like Inman Islands, Hoonah, I guess we can call them remote. They don't have a testing facility and any of those other places that a skiff or a plane or whatever might take you. Free of charge for residents. If a out-of-state resident wants to use that place, it costs $250 for their first test. But all vouchers, which are redeemable after 7 to 10 days of your initial test date, are free of charge to residents and non-residents. And we highly encourage people to go back and retest after traveling and after your initial test. That is how we caught a couple cases this summer time period. We're on the voucher testing. So it did work for us to have people go back and do that. So please do that. The hours of those are based around the seaplanes flights. So they're there about 8:30 to 10, and then from about 2:30 till 4 every day, 7 days a week doing that. Also, the asymptomatic testing at Search is every Saturday from 9:30 to 1. That's free for anybody who wants to go and test also. They're also testing inside the school facility every Tuesday for staff and students. With that, the last couple of weeks, we've been testing right around 24 people at the asymptomatic testing and about 7 people inside the school every day. And we get about 10 people per week taking advantage of the airport testing. So we're testing a really good chunk of the community coming in and out and traveling and just doing their testing because they might be in a high-risk area. The tent, that's I think mainly all I had for this time. Cares money stuff later, so see Mike's got a question. I'll take that, maybe they'll spark something else for me.
Okay. Thank you, Travis.
Well,
go ahead, Mike.
Yes, Travis, I didn't have a question. I just wanted to recognize you and the whole crew at the airport for doing a great job. You guys have made our application or our implementation of the governor's program here in Gustavus effective. And it's made a big difference. It's part of what's helped keep the spread out of Gustavus. And I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you, your supervisors there at the airport, and the whole crew. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. I just want to, because of that, I just want to let everybody know who's doing that. Tim Sunday and Haley Zink were my main two people this summer. They kind of oversaw and supervised all of the testing and screening of that. And then we had Caleb Warren and Kaylana Warren. They helped out for the first couple months, along with Ken McGowan. And then recently we've picked up Cam Cassiopo and Cody Kelly to help finish out the season. So they work long, well, not necessarily long hours, but 7 days a week. And they're there every day, rain or shine, trying to help people go through the testing process. So it's all on them. I'm just here overseeing the contract and helping, making sure it happens, but they're doing all the legwork. So thank them when you guys see them too.
This is Karen Platt, the clerk. It looks like we have Cal Cassipet, the mayor, back. So I'll go ahead and let him take over the meeting. Thank you, Brittany.
Hey, Karen, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Cal.
Okay, I don't have co-host yet, and it looks like it hasn't come through on my end yet, so I guess I'll just, I just wanted to go back and start off where I just wanted to make sure that folks knew that Susan resigned her seat effective before the meeting on our regular meeting on October 12th. So that position will be subject to election and be held. That'll be a 1-year term, and that'll be in the next election, city election coming up. And I just wanted to put a plug in for those who are listening that the filing deadline is September 16th. That's just a couple days away at 4 p.m. So folks who are interested in serving on the council should really remember that and try to get your application in before that deadline. It's work, but it's a lot of work, but it's really rewarding. I think most people would most people on the council would say it's anyway. So we just heard from Travis and his COVID update. There were some questions, and I see Joe Clark has his hand up. So I'm going to recognize Joe Clark and go ahead, Joe. I assume you had a question for Travis.
I thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I did. First of all, I'd like to applaud Travis, you and your team and all the work you've done. It hasn't been an easy job. It's been constant and day to day, and we all appreciate it. I have two questions, unrelated, but kind of related. I heard that Search was having funding problems, and that our clinic may not move from its present location on Dolly, off of Dolly Varden and Greenling down to Dock Road. And that Lisa didn't have, there would be some question question of Lisa still being retained after December. I don't know if that's rumor or if you have further information on that. My second question was that I saw your opening plan for the community chest, and I wondered, do we have an opening plan for the library? So the first one was the search question, and the library is the second question.
Thanks, Joe. So the search question, most of that is rumor. What I can tell you is that all hospitals are having funding issues around the country. When they stopped allowing elective procedures going on during the COVID process, a lot of money was lost, and they're still trying to figure out how to make that up. On Search's part, I'm not speaking for Search by any means or any of that, but you know, they acquired a lot of clinics and did a lot of stuff right before this also happened, which, you know, could put them in a financial spot and maybe slow down the process of opening up our clinic. Nothing has been said. Lisa's contract is up at the end of the year, and we're all crossing our fingers that they reach out shortly and extend that contract and keep her here. So most of it's rumors, but some of the timing of the dates and stuff were correct. Also, I sent out about my reopening suggestions also included the library. Most of those things are the same aspects as the library. They could all be done the same. I think that the staff understood that if they got that though. And I think that Tom in his report is talking about reopen, and there'll probably be questions and answers from the staff as well during that time period.
Thank you. It was termed a full reopening, so that is in regards to both the chest and the library. Thank you.
Correct. Yeah, most of those things went both ways. They just could be, and those are just my suggestions, not that we should do that. Those are just what I believe, so.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Shelley, you had a question for Travis?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. So Travis, as I understand, Search is discontinuing their testing. I'm not sure whether you're receiving me. I think you are. Discontinuing their testing as of the end of December, and with the city testing ending at the end of October. Have you considered seeking CARES funding to continue testing into next year?
I haven't been seeking that money through our CARES money. That's something that the council and you guys can work on, but it's not something that I suggested we spend our CARES money on. There might be some more routes in the future. We just have to get through the next few months to figure out what the state's also going to do and where we're going to go with vaccines. That's a thing I could talk about, I guess, for a second. Is that the state and CDC have been talking about having vaccines roll out in November, mid-November time period, the first string of them, and those will be for like healthcare workers and essential workers, firefighters, first responders, and those type of people, with a second one coming in December to top off those same groups of people, and then in early January, the state's got talks of rolling out vaccines to the general public. They're looking at two different vaccines at the time, from what I understand, and it's all about when those are available to the public also. But the CDC, if you guys have seen those articles, are telling states to be ready for a November rollout.
Okay, thank you, Travis. Any more questions for Travis? Okay, moving on, let's move on to Tom's report. Tom, you wanna go ahead and take us off here?
Okay. So we have several stars on the agenda tonight. First has to do with our CARES Act funding. I'm looking for some direction how the council would like to proceed in identifying uses. I would recognize that we're running out of time in terms of receiving the funds, getting them out to the recipients so that they could spend the funds by the end of the year. You also received with this packet several proposals from people in the community that have come in after the three projects that were sent out earlier in the month that came from members of the community and Council Member Warner. So there's lots of ideas out there. All of them have work involved for staff before we can get it published and out and then turn it around to select projects and then get the money spent. So I'm looking for some direction on how you would like to proceed. If there's any comments or suggestions that I can start putting together, that would be great. Or if we can even have an idea this evening. So I'll open that up for any comments or direction from council members. Okay, well, maybe some thoughts later on. If any of you have...
Hold on.
Okay, yes, I didn't know I was had been called on. Thank you.
I saw your name first, Mike. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Tom, it seemed from the comments that there was the primary support was for an even distribution of cash in some way to the community, either to per family or per individual or some such, rather than spending it on projects and so forth. What do we know now about our assurances of being reimbursed if we distribute CARES money as cash? Is there still a risk that the city would end up not being reimbursed and we'd have a big loss? Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Well, I know other communities have done things like give what they're calling it stimulus checks. Some communities are putting money on utility accounts. So it's been pretty broad-based in terms of what uses have been approved at the state level. As it says later on here in the report, the state has reviewed all of the reports coming in from the different municipalities, and then they forward them off to the Treasury, who then goes through a process of reviewing the expenses and then either issuing letters of approval or sending them back to the state with either denials or follow-ups. All of the things that have come out of Gustavus through the state have been reviewed and found to be compliant. I haven't heard from any of the other communities of any of the cash or utility type programs being denied at either the state or the federal level. So I think there's a pretty good level of confidence that if we were to do something like the proposed RUST program, which is a utility program where residents would receive money to help with utility payments, that probably has high confidence of approval. An individual cash, like a check, I would run it through the city attorney, but based on what I've seen from other communities and what I've heard from the state, I think that also has a high level of success. So I think either one of those or any program similar to that should work out. I hope that answered your question, Mike.
Yes, that's very helpful, Tom. And it does sound like that's the kind of direction that the community would like, and perhaps the simpler means of, you know, whatever is the simple way of getting the cash out, and probably in a means, in a way so that they can eventually essentially spend it however they want, rather than us directing how it is spent. Now, if we credit utility accounts, say electricity, then that would allow people to use the savings that they would, since they wouldn't have to send it to the utility, they can then use their cash for whatever they want and whatever's the best fit for their family. But it does sound like that's the kind of direction the public was interested in. It is public money. And so, you know, it's important, I think, to listen to the public and how they would like to use it. It sounds like giving everybody a little cash support during this time is the most popular option in one way or another. Thanks.
Okay, Joe, you're next. Joe. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Oh, was that for Joe Van Der Zanden? No. Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've read through, I think, most of the suggestions for CARES funds, and most of them have merit. I think some had less than others. I thought we'd get a little bit more support for roads and the trails, but we didn't. Bike lanes were mentioned. The dock down at Salmon River Harbor was mentioned. But I think my idea is to pick one project, for instance, website development, which would be aimed at future recovery for Gustavus businesses. But I think Colleen Stansberry, I'm going to quote her, her statement out of one of her letters. She said, "Spending on individual needs vary. Please support unrestricted support to the entire resident community." And I think that's fair. I think if we could just choose one project and then put it out to the community without managing their individual needs, I think that would be a good way to go.
So, Joe, if I understand what I hear you say, it's provide every resident with an amount of money and they can spend it as they feel they need to. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, Shelley, I had you.
Yeah, I agree. I think the direct support communication that we've gotten from the community has been very strong. I had put my hand up because I was going to suggest a work session if we were going to be discussing individual projects, because there's quite a level of sophisticated ideas that have come in. But I do agree with the concept of direct support to the community, and I've been hearing, you know, a lot of comments about allowing people to purchase firewood, winter coats, for example, if the family decides that is a greater need than you know, money in a utility account, and leave it up to people to decide what it is that they best need to support the families during the winter.
Thank you, Shelley. I think okay. I have you then in the same camp as Mike and Joe C, providing each resident with a payment. That's correct?
Yes.
Okay, Joe Vanderson, and you were next.
Yeah, I agree with the others that the most equitable thing is just to spread it out evenly among the community rather than attempt any project which will affect a few but not everyone. I did want to ask one more time, though, is there any way that the repairs on the library would qualify under the COVID money? Because that's pretty much used by the whole community. I don't think there would be too much complaining about that, but I just wanted to ask.
Thanks, Joe. As far as using it for the library, there's some elements of the use criteria that would be problematic. For example, if it was already in the budget as of March, if it is a local government or municipal building, what they're trying to do is not have local governments use up all the money and it not getting out to the community. So depending on how we were to write up the justification, it's possible, but I think it, I don't have as high level of confidence in that as say the other suggestions. If the council wants to pursue that, I could work with the city attorney in crafting language to ensure that it's compliant with the CARES Act requirements, and then get back to the council with what that might look like, if that's acceptable.
Thank you.
Okay, Brittany.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I wanted to thank all of the community members that wrote in emails. It was really heartening to see all those in our inboxes. And thank you to staff for putting so much work into getting those emails out to us and then compiling all of the information. I really appreciate all of you. I'm also in favor of the stipend for residents. I had a clarifying question. Are we thinking that if we went down this road of distributing the money amongst Gustavus residents, that would be a very large portion of the rest of the funds that we were given? Or would there still be some that we would need to distribute?
Thanks, Brittany. Well, of course, it would depend on how much money we wanted to give to each resident, and then how many residents would submit an application or request for the funds. We could limit it so that there was $100,000 remaining, for example, that the council could then use. We do have some expenses that we are identifying throughout the duration of the CARES Act funding, such as the salary and stuff for employees that are allowable under the CARES Act guidance. We have some outstanding projects that haven't been completed. The spending hasn't been completed. So we would create that buffer, but we would do a program, as I see it, that we would identify the number of residents, have them submit an application demonstrating residency, find out what that number is, divide it into what's left over, and then divvy up the pot either equally or to whatever amount the council set. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. The reason I ask is, there were a lot of other proposals from community members that I really appreciated and thought would be a good use of the money, such as stipends for the EMS volunteers, and some others. And I was curious to see what the rest of the council members thought about that. So I guess maybe it sounds like we're potentially leaning towards another work session to figure out the amount to do a stipend for. So maybe we can talk about those other options then.
Thanks, Brittany. Yeah, so far I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people who would like to see a direct payment to residents. One possibly use of library, use of the fund for the library. I see Susan has her hand up. She may have another idea, but that's certainly a majority. If we were to hold another work session to discuss how such a program would work, I would work with Phoebe in coming up with a outline that we could use, ensure that it's compliant with the CARES Act funding guidelines, and then the council could use that information in giving us direction on how to and what limit to create the program. Thank you.
Susan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I would be in favor of having very soon now another work session to figure out the details and amounts of what we want to do. But I'd also ask that we get some clarification from the city administrator to get further clarification on the stipulations for the CARES Act money, because my understanding was that it was a reimbursement program for allowed expenditures. And I would like to see more information about if just handing people blank checks would qualify under that stipulation. And thirdly, I asked Phoebe earlier today to clarify whether the state has actually approved our $162,725 that we spent so far, because I thought we were still on the hook potentially from the US Treasury. So Phoebe, if you're on, could you tell folks what you told me today about that? Thanks.
I'm using a different headset, so could someone verify they can hear my voice?
I can hear you, Phoebe.
We've got you.
Okay, thank you. As of today, we've spent $216,000. And what I was speaking to Susan about is we have been submitting our monthly reports as required to the state of Alaska, and they have not yet come back to us saying that our expenditures are approved and we can keep the CARES Act funds for those approved expenditures. What it sounds like from talking with Tom and talking to other communities is that at this point, no news is good news. That other communities are being contacted when expenditures are not approved. And so since we haven't been received a communication like that, that probably means we are in doing on the right track with our expenditures to date. They also changed the form in August and required us to resubmit everything again. And so there was some speculation that maybe some of those approvals had been held up in anticipation of a change in format coming through. So yes, I think technically we are on the hook for these because we have not received our final okay to keep the funds for those expenditures, but some of them were submitted almost 3 months ago now, our first chunk of expenditures. And so given what we're seeing in other communities, I expect those will be approved eventually since we have not heard that they are denied.
So to follow up with that, I did receive an email from the state. I did forward that to the council. You should have received it, where the state rep did tell us that we have not heard from U.S. Treasury. They had not heard from U.S. Treasury. And you're correct, these are reimbursable. So we are on the hook until the Treasury approves this. They did not see any problems with what we had sent to them, as they had sent those to the Treasury. The way the Treasury is responding, as slow as they are, I don't know that it's reasonable to think we will have a response from Treasury in time that we could spend the remaining funds if we were to hold on to them, or if we were going to have to resubmit with further explanation for them to consider it. So yes, it is a reimbursable program. Yes, we are on the hook until Treasury stamps it with approval. And yes, the state has reviewed ours and have not kicked any of those back. So I hope that helps, Susan.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. So I just am... can I respond to Tom?
Susan, if you have a follow-up, go ahead, but I'm trying to keep it to I'm trying to get around so everybody gets their say, and I haven't had a chance to speak yet, so go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just trying to insert a note of caution that we make sure that if we're going to write unrestricted checks, that we're gonna be reimbursed for that. Thank you.
Okay, this is Cal, and I'm the last council member to speak on this, so I'm gonna give everybody a chance to speak first. I read every public comment that came in. I read all the additional proposals that were proposed. I thought long and hard about road proposals, the road proposals and the trail proposals, and my concern comes down to this, is that this money has to be spent before the end of the year. We don't get a chance to ask if we can spend it, Mother May I can spend it this way. We're not gonna get a chance to do that. We're not gonna get a chance to ask that question. It ain't gonna get answered before the 31st. And we don't use the December 31st. And if the money isn't used by December 31st, it goes away, we lose it, it's gone. Guaranteed somebody else is going to scoop it up. So that's the overlying concern for me. The other one is related to that is we don't have a whole lot of time to carry this out for it to be meaningful. If we're talking about a reimbursement for utilities or something like that, or put it on people's accounts, I mean, that's going to take some time. There's going to be a changeover in councils here in a month. I only see a couple months of time to get this done where it's meaningful to people if they're going to use it on their accounts and use it before December 31st. I mean, I don't know how you use $500 worth of electricity in 2 months. Maybe some people do. I don't. So that's the other concern. That's kind of why I'm leaning towards a direct payment to residents. And I kind of like the idea of using either getting your PFD here, or if you're registered to vote here, that's, you get the payment. And I like the idea of being directly to people. I know it's going to mean some work for Phoebe and Tom and Karen and all. But at least, it would get to people to use in time for it to be meaningful. And that's what I'm concerned about. So, and like I said, we're not gonna get, you can from the Treasury before the 31st of December. I just, I
that don't see that happening. I mean, the if every municipality in the country is expecting this treasury to come back to them and say whether or not they spent the money right, it isn't going to happen. There's not enough people to do that. And I guess that's all I have. Go ahead, Tom.
Mayor, do you want me to work with staff in setting up a work session, or do you want me to put together a program and get that out to the council? How would you like me to proceed?
I think we just need to start putting the program together. And if we need a another work session to discuss about how this program would work or how we can do that, but let's start putting the program together. I think we can agree on amount of money to dedicate to it right now, tonight, right here, right now. I think Phoebe said that, you know, we're half the way to our first lift, and we still got two lifts to go. And in those remaining two lifts, there's $250,000 plus another $150,000. Probably close to another 100,000 yet to invoice off our first lift. So there's plenty of money and still money left over to do some of those small things that are on that worksheet that Phoebe's been working on, like the salmon and the food security stuff and all that other stuff. And by the way, folks need to get working on that too. I mean, if we're going to carry out the food delivery services, if we're going to carry out the food security stuff, like the vacuum sealers and that kind of stuff, we need to get moving on that now. And I'm not sure if staff is supposed to do that or if the council members who were advocating for that was going to handle that. I'm not sure. Anyway, we can talk about that too. Susan, I saw your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I guess I got a different number from Phoebe today about how much money was left available in all three lifts. So maybe Phoebe can address that. Thanks. And by the way, I'm on getting the food sealer and the grinder ordered, spec'd and ordered, and the halibut run won't go until October. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, would you like me to go over the funds briefly?
Yeah, go ahead, Phoebe. In fact, if you have a spreadsheet that would make it easier for folks to follow along, that would be, and Karen can put it up, that would be fine too. I'm easy. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Karen, if you could get that spreadsheet, I email, that would be great. We have received, the first payment was $381,000 in June. We need to spend at least $304,000 of that, 80% before the second payment is released, which is $125,000, and then 80% of that to spend to release the third payment, $125,000. On the spreadsheet, the items in green is money that has actually been spent on the top half there. And so as of today, we're at just about $217,000 of what we've actually spent. Those top few numbers have already been submitted to the state. August is final, and then September, the 20,000 number is still ongoing since we're just mid-month. The lower half of the spreadsheet here is, I reorganized this, showing what we have earmarked through various things thus far, but spent. This includes the payroll and benefits for the fire chief through the end of the year, plus the additional intern hours to help at the library through the end of the year. And I threw in a ballpark number for other staff's eligible payroll and benefits that when they're working on CARES Act eligible activities through the end of the year. Through the various improvements for the facilities, Anything that's actually been spent is up in the green numbers up top. And anything that's just been approved but not actually purchased yet is included here. The local economic, the economic assistance grant for locally owned and operated businesses application period ended today. And it looks like we'll spend just over $55,000 on that program. The council had earmarked $150,000. So that number there in yellow, the 94,353, I believe will be the number that remains in that pot that can be returned for other projects. The smaller projects below that are all things that council members were working on and ballpark numbers we had included for now. Can you scroll down a little bit, please, Karen? I threw the $188,000 in there for the program or any of these other programs that have been talked about. That is the remaining funds that would still, that are not earmarked in any other categories. And then we had ballpark $9,000 for a generator for the emergency tent. As we know, we received that emergency tent that the point of entry COVID-19 testing has occurred at the airport. That has all its bells and whistles except for a generator to run the thing if we were to use it in a real emergency. That $9,000 is low. So Travis can speak to that if and when we want to figure that part out. But that leaves us at $631,000, which would be all of the funds from the top of the spreadsheet. That's be all three payments total, $631,000. When we first embarked on this project, we talked about keeping the third payment kind of earmarked to see if they change the restrictions on the use of funding so that we could use it for lost revenue for municipalities. And we have not seen them changing those restrictions. And at the rate things are going, I don't know that we will see it in time, even if they did decide to do it. So I would say that we would release that idea at this point and take that off the spreadsheet. It's not included in any of the totals right now, but it's just, I left it on there because we had talked about it earlier. So if you scroll back up a little bit, please, Karen, but the things that aren't earmarked for anything yet are the remaining funds from the local economic grant, assistance grant for $94,000. And then all the rest of the money is lumped into that $188,000 pot.
Okay, thank you, Phoebe. Any questions or clarifications from Phoebe on that? Well, just on the $188,000 that we had set aside for Rust, trail improvements and other programs, plus what was left over from the business stuff is getting, let's see, that's pretty close to just a little bit short of $300,000. So it seems like we can dedicate $200,000 to some sort of payments to residents and still have some money left over just in case there's overruns on any of this other stuff. And probably still be able to spend it before the end of the year in case it is a little bit more than we thought. So is there any objections to having staff prepare such a program direct distribution in the amount of about $200,000? I'm not seeing any objections from council. Tom, I think you got your marching orders there. Oh, Brittany, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that this would be per resident, not per household.
If that's how the council wants to do it, we can do it per resident. If it's utility, clearly it's going to be per household. If it's a cash payment, we could do it per resident.
Joe Vanderzand, and I saw your.
Yeah, I think per resident is the only equitable way to do it. Households vary so much that it just wouldn't be fair in any way.
Mike Taylor, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with Joe. I think doing it per resident is going to be the most acceptable to everybody. And there are, you know, people with families probably have a greater need, maybe more impacted by the COVID experience here than those of us who are just, say, a couple in a house. So I think probably finding a way to do it per resident, say, as long as they've qualified for a permanent fund dividend, this would be sort of following that model of covering everybody equally, whether they're a child or an adult. Thanks.
Thank you. So if I have the direction, what we'll do is I'll create an outline using $200,000, be able to demonstrate residency by a copy of the permanent fund dividend application. Of course, that's going to show how many people within that application. And then if somebody doesn't have a PFD or didn't file, maybe they haven't been here a year yet, we could use, say, voter registration or some other means to prove residency for the family unit, and then just get a number of people who live within that household in order to come up with the number of recipients. Does that sound good, Mayor? I'll get that outline out no later than the first of next week, if that works.
Yeah, we can work on that as we go. Yeah, I'm just not so sure. I'm not sure what's going to be easier for folks, whether it'd be easier just to show a copy of their voter registration or PFD. We'll work. Staff should be able to figure out the best way to do that. And I mean, even if there's a list that we can get from Department of Revenue or something with the PFD recipients on there, that would probably help our end process them faster too. I'm not sure. I don't know what we can do, but we can figure that out. Shelly, your hand's up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would just caution against using the voter registration as the primary source of validation, because there's just an awful lot of people, you know, on the voter registration that aren't residents here. So I think the PFD is probably the most accurate.
Okay, thank you, Shelley. Okay, Tom, I think do you have enough there? I think they want to base it on, I think we want to base it on PFD and go from there.
Yep, and I'll check with the city attorney for a secondary method of proving residency, just again for those that either don't apply or haven't been here long enough. He should be able to give me a good suggestion or two.
Yeah, I agree with that, Tom, because I know for a fact that there's folks here in town that I know have lived here for a long time who, for whatever reason, don't apply for PFDs, and they've been here forever. And there's some way we're going to have to be able to account for them. Maybe it's an affidavit signed by two friends that know I'm here in town or something like that. We have to make allowances for the. Okay, Tom, do you want to continue on with your report before we get to the general meeting agenda review?
Yes. So the next star is the Gustavus Community Network Tower. We have had an inquiry about selling the tower. I'm looking for direction on whether or not the council is interested in selling it, and if so, if there is a suggestion for a minimum bid. As you can see in the report, we have it listed on our fixed asset schedule for $15,559, and we purchased it in 2011 for $11,929. So is the council interested in selling the tower? And if you are, any idea or suggestion on a minimum bid?
Shall I go ahead?
I guess I'd like to hear some more information about the tower. What was it used for? What is its potential? I don't know if it's the type of tower that could be used as a radio transmitter or not. I know there's been a discussion ever since I've been here about a small radio station. So what is it? What was this? What was it used for, and why is it being stored at the DRC?
Phoebe, do you want to reply to that? I know you have more knowledge on that than I do.
Mike might know more than I do about it. All I really knew is what I have corresponded with you about, Tom. I haven't researched the file back at City Hall. I believe it was purchased at the time they were considering trying to put up a tower to relay internet broadband signal from the hydroelectric area at the top of the hydroelectric road when Gustavus Electric still owned the facility. And I believe there were some permitting issues. And then I would have to go back in the files to refresh my memory on why it didn't go through. It sounds like, looks like Mike has his hand raised, but it has not been used, but maybe Mike can speak more to it.
Go ahead, Mike. Yeah. Do you have more?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, Phoebe's got it was going to be a multi-purpose tower, and this was back in 2011 or so. And it was also possible to use it as a repeater for the fire department, which would greatly increase our radio coverage for emergency response or improve it. And it also had the potential to be rented out as a cell tower, as a base for a cell tower. And the city was proceeding with it to install it. And then they ran into a problem that they hadn't got permission from FERC, who controls the, permits for that project up there. And the tower was not something that was in the approved project. So the whole thing kind of died. It probably could be resurrected. We just have to work through a permitting process and have a real use for it. Seems to me that probably the best thing is to sell it, and I would try to set a minimum bid equal to what we spent for it. And in fact, we could put the money into roads, maybe, might be my preference. So that's kind of what I know about it. Thanks.
Susan, go ahead.
Well, I would see it, I would express preference for keeping it as a strategic asset. It's been expressed by the public as being extremely important to improve internet and cell reception in Gustavus. And it's a strategic asset that could be used in topology to address those for a citywide basis and not just sell it off to one private individual. So my vote would be to hang on to it until we have a plan for how we're going to advance cell and internet reception in Gustavus. Thanks.
Okay, I've got one that says sell, one says keep. Any other comment from council members? Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I don't think money for roads is ever wasted, but it is a specialized item, and I agree with Susan.
Any other council comment? No other council comment. I guess, Tom, I guess we're going to hold on to it for a while.
All right, thank you. The last item I have has to do with opening of city facilities. The proposal that was sent out to you folks, and then it's on the report here, was put together with input from the departments who spoke to volunteers, patrons, and others about their facility. This was intended to be a discussion point to get council input on what, if anything, you want us to do in terms of making preparations to operate differently than we currently are. So it's broken down by department, and if the council is interested, we could go through each one of the departments and get your input on how we would move forward to operate city facilities. I recommended that this would go until December 31st, and then have another discussion about winter operations if you want to make any changes. Of course, it could change anytime the council wanted to direct staff to operate differently, but this would be a starting point so that staff has some direction and is able to make preparations for any changes. How does that sound, Mayor?
That sounds fine. Have folks got a chance to read all this? I mean, it seems like we could save a step here if I just go one by one through the council, and then the council just shares their questions, concerns with each department one by one, or do you want to just do them all at once? I guess. I guess we can do them one. So let's go ahead and do them one by one. We'll start with City Hall. So Tom, did you want to introduce the City Hall thing? And then I'll ask council for questions and comments on City Hall.
Okay, that sounds great. So I have heard from a couple council members that they would like to have council meetings at City Hall, at least in the beginning, with the possibility of three new members joining, being able to talk with staff and other council members would be useful to have proximity for the discussion. In addition, staff would operate like it did before COVID. The treasurer, the clerk, and myself would be in the building. As you know, the way we're situated, we are apart from each other, so we would have social distancing, and then we would encourage folks to call in advance to set appointments to meet with any of us so that we can make any necessary arrangements. For example, if somebody wants to come in and get a notary, of course we set that up at the table, and we could have that to make sure that it's as safe as possible for everybody. So that's that would pretty much run as long as we are what I was calling a moderate risk. We don't have any community outbreaks, kind of like it is today. If we did have community outbreaks, or the fire chief thought that we were at a higher risk, we would go back to how we're operating currently with the clerk at City Hall and the treasurer and myself working remotely. All of these have been discussed by the fire chief. I believe his comments were sent out to everyone. So it's a relatively fluid document. And again, that's why we're looking for some direction from the council. So that's City Hall.
Okay, Brittany, I saw you first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If the City Hall staff is okay with being in the building all at the same time, I feel good about that. I trust all of you to social distance. As far as council meetings go, I think that I would be okay with resuming them back in City Hall as long as there were no community members in the building, just because it's such a small space. So just staff and council members. And then we can continue the Zoom meetings from there and maybe have one camera on or something so people can see us if the community would like that, I guess. And then I'm not sure what kind of like partitions are available for council members. Otherwise, I think maybe masks are still a good idea if we're gonna be that close to each other. Thanks.
Thanks, Brittany. We would ask council members to wear masks because of the proximity to one another. And we would hold the meetings on Zoom so that folks could still participate. But it was our idea to have those meetings closed at City Hall, except for the council members and necessary staff. So thank you for bringing those points up.
Shelley, go ahead.
I think the construct of having sort of limited access and appointments and 30-minute maximum times, all of those provisions for the other facilities seem reasonable to me. I think that the idea of having the council meet is something that I pretty strongly oppose. That's as many as 10 people in a small confined state space for several hours. And the more that this pandemic goes on, they're finding that that the airborne particulates can travel as much as 20 feet and then linger in the air for hours. And I guess I'd ask, well, what has changed? Why is it safe now when it wasn't safe, you know, when we closed down? And we're facing a second wave. We're not even out of the first wave with flu coming in. And the questionable, we don't know whether we're going to have the clinic. We're possibly not going to have community testing. I guess I'd ask, how many communities have opened, have their councils are meeting in open sessions? And then what accommodations will be made for members that don't want to congregate in City Hall? Last thought, I guess, is that postponing the decision until after the election so that the new members can weigh in on this decision. But I think it's a high risk thing to do, and I don't think it's reasonable for us to be congregating in a small space for hours at a time.
Thanks, Shelley. I'm not sure if you were looking for responses from me or anything on that, but clearly we could change how we did it based on what the council wants to do. I'm not aware of any other communities on how they're doing it or if they've changed. I haven't looked into that. Gustavus, I think, is pretty unique on lots of fronts. So I don't have an answer to any of those. But if you're looking for me to get an answer for you, let me know and I'd be happy to do that. Thanks.
Let me finish. The council members, there's council members haven't had a chance to ask questions or comments, and I want to get to them first. So the next one I had show up here was Joe Van Der Zand. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I'm still in favor of having meetings at City Hall for the council, at least for October. The only reason I can think of possibly not doing that would be if all the new council members were seasoned from of old, and but there's bound to be somebody new, and they have the oath taking and finding a new mayor and all of that. It's, I don't see how you do that on Zoom. So I'd still be in favor of just spreading out around the room and doing it in person. Thank you.
Okay, Mike Taylor, you're next.
thank you. I'm okay with that whole plan for opening City Hall. I appreciate Shelley's concern, and I don't want to think I would discount her concerns. I understand we have another piece of table that we have on order. I think maybe you can confirm that, Tom, and that that would allow us to sit farther apart. If we're using masks, that'll help. And we could all consider, say, getting tested every week or every other week or something like that on the using the free testing facility while that's going on to give us some confidence. And then finally, if a council member really had a concern, they could certainly participate from home via Zoom. So there'd be an option there for people with concerns. And but we would all have to be very careful about protecting each other and respecting each other's needs for an assurance for avoiding COVID. So I think we can make it work. And if it doesn't seem to be comfortable for people, we can always go back to 100% Zoom. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. And you're correct. We do have on order another table piece. That would help us achieve the 6 feet apart preference between council members. And yes, if a council member didn't want to participate in person, I'm sure we could make accommodations to have them participate via Zoom. So thank you for those comments.
Okay, Joe Clark, I have you next.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I probably wouldn't participate in person there because I'm in a high risk category. But I think it'd be best if we just waited for, well, hopefully a vaccine, and we can open up and move forward and everyone would feel comfortable. But I would participate from home.
Okay, Susan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I would need to participate from on Zoom, but I'll be departing. Thank you.
You know, and that's about what I was about to say too. I will not, won't be mayor then, and I won't be on the council then. So I don't really have a dog in that fight. But I think what Mike says is right on that, you know, open it up. And if folks, council members don't feel comfortable, they can always Zoom in. But I sure appreciate having staff around when I'm doing the meeting there for, from the office. I'm not there right now. I'm doing it from here for my own comfort again, my own personal comfort and ensuring my complicating circumstances are taken care of. So, I totally understand wanting to Zoom from home. So it sounds like both perspectives are accommodated for the office opening, and I'm okay the way it's written. So any other comment on office? The main city offices before we move on.
So,
okay, Tom, do you want to kick us off in the library, and we'll do the same round robin for the library.
Okay, could I just make sure I understand, since we're going to be setting up for the upcoming meetings, we're going to have it available for council members at City Hall. Those that don't want to come to City Hall will have them attend by Zoom. And do we want to start that at the general meeting or start that for the October meetings?
Well, in your proposal, it says you're going to start it on the 12th. So that's what I was assuming.
Okay.
That's probably what the council was thinking too. They were going by what's written here. So I think everybody was okay with the 12th.
Sounds good. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor? Sorry, I don't have the ability to raise my hand since I'm the host. But I think one thought was that to invite the council member candidates to attend the September 21st general meeting in person so they could have a chance to see a general meeting in action in person before they're possibly sitting at the table making decisions. That was one thought that we had regarding the September 21st meeting.
So the prospective council members would join me in the office on the 21st. Is that what you're saying?
I think that, you know, whoever is comfortable being here at the office would be great. If you're not comfortable being in here in the office, in the chambers, then you have the option to Zoom in. We are limited on the number of people that we can have in here, 6 feet apart. And so I just thought it would be nice to be able to invite the new candidates to join us on the 21st, depending on how many people we have here in person. And it looks like only three council members are interested in attending in person.
Well, let's work out those logistics as we go. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about this right now. Let's try to get through this opening plan, and we can discuss logistics for next week's meeting later this week, maybe.
Okay, so the library, as you can see, has a proposal in which we're doing the same pickup process and then setting appointments for folks. I think this is a proposal that is conservative and was created with as much safety and protection that they felt was good to start bringing people into the library. I have talked to the fire chief about this, and I think he believes that we can have some entry and interaction in the library, taking all the precautions outlined here and ensuring that folks comply with some of the procedures. For example, wearing a mask. If someone came in and refused to wear a mask, there would be a closure of the library while cleaning was done. I think the proposal was close it for 3 days, somewhat as a disciplinary action or some other identification process. But I don't think 3 days would be necessary if we wanted to open sooner than that. But I think having time to do the cleaning and ensure that the space is protected, then we would want to do that. So library is the next department up.
Okay, any comments for the library? Go ahead, Britt.
Has the new custodian been hired for the library?
No, not yet.
Okay, Shelley, go ahead.
I think it looks like a well thought out proposal. The appointments with a single adult or caregiver child unit. I just am wondering about the appointments for 30 minutes. What is that based on? I know that they talk about, you know, if you're going to be in a closed environment for 15 minutes, I don't know what the science is on that. How was that 30-minute period of time arrived at?
Well, I'm not sure. Travis, maybe you can address that, or maybe Jen, if she's online.
That wasn't something that I did, but I can pass that on to Michelle also. But one thing that I can add to that is that, just as a reminder, that it's 15 minutes within 6 feet of somebody, or standing within 6 feet of somebody for 15 minutes in a spot that you can't social distance is where that 15-minute number is. So I can let if the library staff wants to speak on why they put a 30-minute limitation on that with for whatever that's on, that's for them to speak about. That wasn't me, but just for clarification on the CDC says 15 minutes with 6 feet apart.
Brittany, go ahead.
Thank you. As far as not having a custodian hired yet and having a deep clean before the library opens for appointments, I'm concerned about putting more
work in front of the librarians who have already been doing so much more work than they normally have to do. So I guess out of all of this, that's my biggest concern, is putting more work on top of them. But I don't know if Michelle wants to speak to that, or Tom, if you've addressed that with the librarians.
Well, in terms of the deep clean, again, this was something that they put together as a proposal. The practicality of a deep clean, if it's similar as what the library received as a deep clean prior to this new contract, I'm not sure that would be feasible if there were, say, three appointments during the day, just because I don't know that you could conduct a deep clean in that kind of time frame. So I think we need to define better what a deep clean would be in these instances. Clearly, I think a cleaning, a disinfecting would be in order. And again, we have equipment that is used to help clarify the air and disinfect. So I think if we put those in the strategic areas, like around the computer stations, et cetera, that we would be able to do that and conduct those operations safely. But if Jen or Michelle want to speak to the 30-minute question, or to the ability for the deep cleaning, I encourage them to do so.
Yeah, this is Michelle. I can speak to that. So the 30 minutes is not based necessarily on COVID interactions, just because, like Travis said, that's within 15 minutes, within 6 feet. And right now we're limiting our appointments to households or child caregiver units, or single adults, which is also a household. And so those people will already be interacting with each other. 30 minutes was more time for enough time to be able to get things done, to browse our books and to pick out books for themselves, instead of us picking out a bunch of books for them to choose from. And then also adequate time to get on the computers and do specific tasks that they have. Within that 30 minutes, you know, of course, Jen and I could be coming into contact with them, and that's why we have, everyone needs to wear masks, and Jen and I will be wearing masks. And then we can also limit it so that we won't be helping somebody for more than 10 minutes, if that's something that we feel is necessary. And then also just to say that none of this can fully open until all of our stuff comes in. Our plexiglass for around our desk checkout, our book checkout station, is not in yet. And we are also waiting for our new furniture that can be wiped down to come in before we can set up the library. As for the deep clean, I mean, that's just kind of your typical top to bottom, ceiling to floor clean. And that can, you know, turn into more of a deep clean, sanitize. To have more of a wipe down of all of our surfaces that our people are going to touch when they're coming in. And then also another thing that we're waiting to come in for are some UVC lamps that will be really helpful in just cleaning every night between uses. Thanks.
Okay, any more council comment on the library? Okay, Tom, let's move on to DRC community chat.
Okay, thank you, Mary, and thank you, Michelle. So Paul is working on coming up with a plan for the community chest. I know he's still working out some of the details, but he is looking to open, as he commented last month. Hasn't quite worked out what the circulation pattern looks like or the number of people coming in, but he's getting close. As far as the DRC, as far as the DRC goes, it looks like we're going to continue operating that as it is now. It seems to be very efficient, and the practices seem to be very protective of both staff and customers coming in. So I know Paul is still working out some of the finer details on that, but do council members have any questions or concern about the CHEST or the DRC?
I don't see any hands up, so move.
Okay, so the last two are the marine facilities and the fire department. And as you can see here, there's not really an opening plan for them. They're going to continue working as they are now. Their marine facilities, of course, Ben is outside. He does do other public work activities for different facility buildings. He'll continue doing that as he is now, making arrangements so that he's either in there by himself or with very minimal other staff in the building with him. In the fire department, the fire chief's going to continue as he is currently. He's still doing training and keeping everybody up to speed. And he can address any questions that you may have about that if you have those. Both the Marine Facilities Coordinator and the Fire Chief are online if you have any questions of them. So any questions or comments about Marine Facilities or the Fire Department?
Go ahead, Shelley.
I guess this is a question for Travis. Is training on site at the fire department now?
Thank you. No, most of our training's been done over Zoom. We've actually kind of been slacking a little bit on it, but we're gonna get back into it. But most of our training's on Zoom, only fire training. We do in person at this time. We can do most of that outside and wear masks and social distance. We're not up in each other's faces doing stuff. So we are going to try to do an EMT class this year, hopefully sometime soon, to get all of our EMTs up to their new skills that they have, because they acquired a bunch of new skills with the new certifications or new guidelines. And then we also have a driver operator class that was put on hold at the beginning of the pandemic that we're going to try to get him over here to do before it freezes this year.
Mayor, I have one other item I would like to share.
Go ahead,
received
Tom.
An update. I received an update on the intertie from Jake Olson, and I'll read that to you. The design contract has been awarded. Subcontracted compliance team and survey team were in Gustavus last week, field verifying the contract information. They are also working on required permits. Expectation is for construction in spring, unless they find difficulties in compliance or permitting. So that's an update from Jake Olson on the intertie. And that's all I have, Mayor.
Well, thanks, Tom. Go ahead, Shelley.
Okay, Tom, I'm assuming when you said that's all you have, I think you were saying basically you've come to the end of your report. I was wondering about the community development block grant application process that you sent out to us. How are we going to proceed on that, if we want to proceed on that?
So for the block grant, I think I sent out, I know at least to you, if not to the council, about some of the restrictions for using the block grant. The primary obstacle that we're faced with is having the low medium income level being below 51%. Or being at 51% or higher, and Gustavus is at 42.11%. That number comes from the census. And if we wanted to challenge that that level, we would have to conduct a community-wide survey. And as you could see from that survey, the timing on that would be difficult to meet the December deadline. So in summary, we were not going to pursue the block grant because we would not qualify for the low medium income requirement.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I also, Tom, I just was hoping you would mention that issue about the AMHS port fees that are being added. I think you got some clarification on that, so I don't know if you wanted to cover.
Sure, it's in the report there. I did speak with the deputy commissioner for DOT. His response to me after a couple of email tags is there on the report. But basically the fee that is being charged to people in Gustavus pays for the line handling and other dock workers that DOT and Marine Highways contracts with. It's in no way a city charge. The city doesn't contract or employ any of these folks. It is for operations of the marine highways. So I know there was a lot of discussion going around on that, some misinformation being circulated, but as you can see there from the deputy commissioner, this is a DOT marine highways fee assessed to communities that have to hire dock workers to help them with the different functions of the ferries coming in and departing.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Thanks for your report. And I guess, Karen, if you're listening, let's go ahead and move to the general meeting agenda. So I just wanted to put that up there. Just real quick, while Phoebe is on, I just wanted to make sure that she has a chance right now here to speak about the financials and some of those NCOs transferring money around, if she needs to refresh anybody's memory on that stuff. But Phoebe, do you want to take it from here, if that's okay?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The monthly financial reports, I didn't really have anything to speak to there unless people had questions about them. There'll be that's slightly updated for the general meeting packet with some final reconciliations that happened for August. But those are the first stab at numbers for August. So I think we can just flip through those, Karen. And then we have some NCOs, non-code ordinances that were introduced in August, and we'll have their public hearing this month. And so we could, I could speak to those briefly if that is helpful. I know it's out of order.
Go ahead. Let me quickly ask for, is there any questions on the monthly financials for Phoebe before we move on to the NCOs? Okay, it doesn't appear to be. Let's move on to the NCOs then. Thanks, Phoebe.
Okay, the first one there on the list is FY2104, this amendment of departmental budgets for fiscal year 21. This just updates our income side with updated numbers we got for our payment in lieu of taxes, money from the feds, and our community assistance program funds from the state. And then also adjusted the fire chief's payroll since the first 6 months of the fiscal year were coming out of CARES Act funds instead of the regular operating budget. That's all this one is. We'll go to the next one. This non-code ordinance, FY2105, was to approve the transfer of funds from the AMLIP CARES Act account, the first deposit we received, back to our checking account. I would say that we would still proceed with having this item on the agenda, but I would not, if it was passed, I would not actually transfer funds until we got some kind of formal notification from the state. I had introduced it last month or proposed it for introduction last month, anticipating that maybe we would actually have heard something by now, but we have not. So I would suggest we would proceed with this, but not actually do the transfer until we got additional information. That's all I have for that one. And this is non-code ordinance FY2106. For the sale of engine 27. If this is approved at the general meeting, then the fire engine would go up for sale the next day for as outlined in the attached sale notice. And that's all I have. Oh, there's more. And this one is FY2107 is to fund two capital projects. The first project is the library roof repair project. The initial amount that was funded was determined as possibly or likely not enough. And so this is another chunk of funds for that capital project to move forward. And then the second item is the only item that was approved in the capital improvement plan for funding this year after the council chose to table the other items until the pandemic effects kind of shook out. So this is funding for the AED monitor for the Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department that is going out of support here shortly. And part of the funding for that will come from the Code Blue grant, likely also. That's all I have.
Okay, do the council have any questions on the NCOs up for public hearing and approval at next week's meeting?
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor, I forgot about this ordinance also. I don't have the agenda up in front of me. I could speak to this one also. I need to.
Okay, we can move on to the endowment fund thing here. It doesn't look like I had any questions from the council on the NCOs. So go ahead and we'll talk about the endowment fund one then. We're just moving right along. Thanks, Phoebe.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. This ordinance FY2008 includes language for recommendations from our endowment fund investment manager, Alaska Permanent Capital Management, adjusting the allowed allocations for our fund to mitigate the impacts of the pandemic on the investment. The investment goal is to, or previously the investment goal was to receive 3% earnings back, and this was rolled into the endowment fund grant program that is issued each year. When we did our annual review with our investment manager this summer, they suggested changes to our allocations, our investment allocations, if we wanted to remain at that 3%, which had also had slightly increased our investment risk, or if we want to remain at our current investment allocations, we would expect slightly reduced earnings 2%. The council chose to remain current investment allocations of the less risk and also projected earnings of 2%. But we had moved forward with this code change to, we move forward with this code change so that in the future the council will be able to change to different investment allocations if they chose to once things settled out that would be allowed in code. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Phoebe. Council, any questions for Phoebe on the endowment fund investment allocation? Okay, Phoebe, doesn't appear to be any questions on that either. Karen, if you're on, Karen, is there anything else? Oh, there was one more thing that I have on my list. Under new business, under the agenda for new business, it's not showing on this version, but I just want to alert the council that we will also be appointing election judges under new business. And so that will be on the list under new business as well. So the other thing that's on the agenda that we might need to talk about is the project scoping documents for the Salmon River Small Boat Harbor launch repairs and the barge ramp. And then issuance of the RFP for doing those two projects. So, Tom, I assume you're going to be covering this.
Sure, and I have Ben's online, and he can fill in any blanks that I might have. So we have two projects, and that's why we have two scoping documents. We have the boat launch ramp, and we have the barge landing. The boat launch is in need of some repair at the end of the ramp. There's some deterioration of the concrete, and the ground underneath is being undercut probably from prop wash and current and just time. The Marine Facilities Coordinator contacted one of the contractors in town and looked at what it would take, how difficult would it be, and how much need is there to repair that. And similar for the barge ramp, looking at the practicability of using that for landing craft. Apparently, when the barge ramp was constructed, the way it was built, of course, works for a barge, but doesn't allow for the landing craft, the gate to come down and be used in a practical way. So there would be some modifications to that. The scoping projects recognize that permitting might be required from the different state and federal agencies, and that would be part of the scope of work. There isn't a requirement for any engineering as written, and that is something that might want to be discussed. This has not gone to the Marine Facilities Advisory Committee body for discussion. It came to me from Marine Facilities Coordinator after discussions with others who use those facilities. And there's another point. So it was originally drafted with the idea of doing engineering, and that's why it was constructed as a request for proposal. But if we don't do engineering and it's just a construction project, then we would change this to a request for quotes, and it would be a different format. But the content would be basically the same. If it's okay, I'd like to have Ben speak to any of the gaps that I may have missed about these two projects. I see Councilmember Taylor has a hand.
Okay, Mike, you had a question. Go ahead.
Maybe we want to hear from Ben first, but I wanted to raise the issue on engineering over.
Okay, Ben, why don't you bring in your information, and then we'll go back to Tom or Mike for his question. Ben, are you there?
Ahead, okay, Ben. Sorry about that. Can you hear me? Can anyone hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Am I good to go, Cal?
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Okay, sorry about that. So basically what Tom said is correct. The boat launch needs to be repaired, and that's an ongoing thing. It's needed to be repaired for a while, and this was anticipated when the facilities were created, and so a repair and replacement fund was enacted, and money was set aside every year for this, and that includes the barge ramp. as all as one thing. Part of the reason why the boat launch is deteriorating where it is because, not the only reason, but part of the reason is because landing crafts use the boat launch to unload their stuff because the barge ramp is unavailable. What it is the setup of a landing craft and the setup of a barge are different. A barge just drives straight in, so it needed something steep that you could drive off of. A landing craft needs something that they can open up the gate and drive onto. And so at the moment, it's too steep. So the basic work there would be creating a rock wall. We would have to buy rock. We couldn't use the rock we have. Creating a rock enclosure to then put the rock that the city owns in it, if the city is willing to allow us to use that rock. And that would, by doing that, they could level out the barge ramp, making it usable by landing crafts. The reason why I thought these two things should go together is because the permitting will be the same for both. So rather than applying for permits twice, we would only have to apply for permits once to do both projects. The reason why I separated it out was because I didn't want there to be a hang up on the barge ramp and us not get the base of the boat launch fixed. And I think I think it's something that needs to be done. I think it's something that has needed to be done, and it's something that we anticipated happening. And so that's why I'm now asking for the money to do that. And then I'll answer any other questions if anyone has any.
Okay, go ahead, Mike. Mike Taylor.
I'm not hearing anything.
Sorry. I had to switch the way I was unmuting here so I could get back to my notes here. But I'm this project was when it was originally built was all engineered, and it's done in a, you know, we're working in a marine environment that's dynamic, with continuing siltation currents, tidal influences. There are significant permitting issues here. I note also that we don't actually own that central piece of land where this is. It is state-owned only, and we manage it under a cooperative resource management agreement. So we one thing we need to do is make sure that we're coordinating with the state on this, because it's a significant issue. And the permitting process may require that the state be involved in this also to make sure that they're on board with it. But I'm not comfortable with putting this out as an RFP that for the contractors just to decide how to fix it. I do like the idea of combining them. And by the way, I applaud Ben for pushing this forward. I think they're really important things to get done. But I think we would benefit strongly by following the normal public works contracting, you know, project process, where you have a consulting engineer design the project, develop the bid documents, determine what has to be done, also do the permitting for us, and complete and provide us with a complete design package that we can then put out for bid. And the contractor would also follow through and monitor the project to make sure that the contractor is completing the work per the design and specifications. I think we'd have a lot more confidence that the project will be properly completed, and that we'll have fewer potential problems if we have a qualified engineer who works on harbors and deals with infrastructure in estuaries like this. We're more likely to get a project that will be successful. So I would say that we combine the projects, but we we hire the services of a qualified consulting engineer to develop a design and develop the project bid package. Thanks.
Susan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I admit I was kind of surprised to see these show up on the consent agenda without any review by the council. And I guess I'm confused. Isn't it supposed to be the charge of the Marine Facilities Committee to make recommendations to the council for allocating funding? Why is this coming to us and bypassing the Marine Facilities Committee? Thank you. And also, one more thing, I was really alarmed by the photos of the state of the floats. And before the city thinks about these infrastructure projects, would we want to look at the floats in terms of, do we have a liability issue there? Thank you.
May I answer, Susan Kell?
Go ahead, Ben. Answer, yeah, if you have an answer for Susan.
Susan, I did speak to the Marine Facilities Committee separately. I've spoken to all but one member. And each of them said to me that this was, they considered this routine maintenance, that this wasn't, that they didn't feel that I had bypassed them. That I've just been doing my job the way that I've been doing it. So I'm trying to do maintenance without involving the Marine Facilities Committee. But the Marine Facilities Committee is aware that I've put this out and all have approved of it, except for the exception is Don Bryant, who I have not spoken with. Thank you.
I think maybe that's what's confusing folks. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the funding for this would come out of the repair and replacement funds, which we've been setting aside for this work for many years, So and then as far as the funding decisions, anyway, that would come later anyway. I think all that Tom is asking for is approving the project scoping, and if we want to change the RFP to something like Mike was talking about, this is where we're giving that direction to Tom to do. As far as it being on consent agenda, I think that was just something where Karen put it. We can move it to new business if folks want to fully discuss approving a scoping document. Anyway, Mike, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
First, just to answer Susan's question about the, or comment about the floats, those are not city property. And they were grandfathered under Title VIII because they existed before, or at least most of them did, before the city took over management of the harbor. And the deal was that as long as they were properly maintained, they could stay there. Obviously, many of them are not well enough maintained, and we do need to address that. But that's really a separate issue, and it's going to be a little more difficult thing to work through because people have certain proprietary interests in them. With regard to whether this is maintenance project, it sounds like the boat ramp is a maintenance issue. But altering the barge ramp to accommodate the landing craft, I'd say is not maintenance. It's really new construction.
Joe Vanderzen.
yes, I think modifying that barge ramp is probably going to be a good idea in the long run, just because we're having more landing crafts come in more often due to our reduced ferry service, and it allows two landing crafts to unload at once without tying up the boat launch. However, I think even though Mike is probably right in everything he said about the approach to it, I think if we go that route, the cost of it is going to be so prohibitive that we'll just throw it out and nothing will get done. It'll be like the composting thing at the DRC. And I guess there's just no way around that other than maybe talk to local contractors and see if they have any other ideas that might work. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Okay, any more discussion on scoping for the small boat harbor launch repairs?
Councilman Clark. Is it critical that we have the state involved in any on-site repair there before anything goes forward?
Tom, did you have something?
Sure. So if we're going to go forward with a repair project, we would contact the appropriate department at DNR to inform them of what we're doing to see if they have any need for information. There's an existing nationwide permit for that area, but it's limited in scope of what we can do with it. And in addition, they would be on the permitting chain that we would go forward with and as part of the scope of work for any respondent. But before we were to put this on the street, we would contact DNR. I would go back through the plat, the CRMA, and look at any restrictions that we might have for it. The documents that I have seen don't address any requirement for us to notify them about maintenance. So I hope that answers your question, Joe.
Thank you, it did.
Mike, you had something else?
Yes, I just note that, by the way, that the CRMA was written to allow the original construction of that. And with DNR's approval, we have sort of extended its use to allow the city to apply its code of ordinance and manage the harbor. Although it was, the CRMA is pretty vague. And frankly, that CRMA really needs to be revisited and rewritten so that it matches our existing situation and more clearly authorizes us to do things like maintenance and maybe do a reconstruction of a boat ramp or things like that. We're a little bit vague in the wording on the CRMA for that. But I am pretty concerned about the fact that this is going on in the river is going to put some really special requirements and concerns on us that and the city could have some liability if we don't do it right and are, say, forced to take it out or something like that. Whereas if we have it properly engineered and permitted, then I think we're likely in the long run actually to save money. The engineer will also be able to estimate what the cost of the project is so we can check our funding in advance before we put it out to bid. There are a lot of advantages to doing it that way. And that's the way a larger city public works department would do a project like this. Thanks.
Susan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I just briefly say I agree with Mike. The addition of the cost of having it properly engineered and permitted is trivial next to what it would cost if we get sued because we didn't do it right. It's different rules for the city than it is for individual people. Thank you.
Okay, any more comments from council? Okay, Tom, do you have enough from us on that? Sounds like we need to or do a little more thinking on getting some engineering services in and all, checking out on what permitting is gonna be involved with that. I know there's gonna be some permitting. You are gonna have fish and game involved because it's a salmon stream. You'll have DEC involved because it will involve some fill, I'm sure. DNR for sure because it's DNR land that we're on that we're using under a CRMA. So I think we probably need to do some more thinking on that.
Yeah, we'll probably need Army Corps. So we could go ahead and move the scoping documents forward. That way we have those approved. The only element missing from those would be if we're going to do any engineering on that. I think that Mike and Susan's comments are helpful. I think they're correct. I think if we have any chance of having a problem with any of the ABC agencies, we're way ahead having that liability on the engineer or on the consultant. So I can ask around and get some idea of what kind of costs we would be looking at in terms of a consulting oversight, if that's what the council wants. And then we can bring a RFP or an RFQ forward after we get that information back to the council. Does that sound like a plan?
Okay, that sounds great. So we'll have the, we'll still be approving the project scoping documents for those, but there might be some modifications to include engineering on those, and then also the RFP or RFQ would come at a later time. Shelley, go ahead.
I'd like to get the input of the Marine Facilities Advisory Committee on the scoping documents before we approve them.
Shelley, was that your comment?
Oh, yes. I'm done.
Okay, Tom, I don't know if we can get the Marine Facilities Advisory Committee to meet before next week's meeting, but I don't know. As Ben said, he talked to each Marine Facilities Committee person other than one, and they all agreed that it was, you know, they were okay with it as part of the regular routine maintenance of our boat launch. So, I don't know.
I can ask Ben to contact the Marine Facilities Advisory Committee and, see if they're interested in meeting to review the scoping documents. I don't think we're going to be doing, we're not going to be doing the work until next spring anyway, because we'll never get it through the ABC agencies that quickly. So it may get delayed for a month if you want to do it that way. We can do it that way.
Well, if we're going to ask the Marine Facilities Committee to meet and discuss things, I've got more on the list than just the boat ramp.
Okay, I'll send the scoping documents out to the Marine Facilities Advisory Committee. They can look at them, and I'll let them know that this is going to be on the general meeting. If they have any comments or thoughts, they can send them to me and I can get that to the council. Does that sound like a good approach?
Yeah, that sounds good, Tom. Thanks. Okay. Let's see, what else is on this agenda that I'm missing? Karen, can you scroll to the next page? There's a few more things on here. Amending the Gustavus's GPAC endowment fund grant budget from last year, rearranging the budget requires approval from the council. I don't know if folks have any questions about that. It's pretty self-explanatory. Any questions on that? Any discussions on that from council? Okay, that looks good. And then I noticed there was the RFP for Tom, did you want to cover this one real quick, the RFP for the library roof repair?
Okay, we did have one respondent to the solicitation for repairing the library roof. Per the scope of work that, or the scoping document that the council had already seen and approved, the bid came in, and we had one respondent. As you can see there, it's for about $109,000. And we're going to start moving forward and getting that implemented.
Joe Van Der Zand, go ahead. I'll lower your hand. Right.
Just wondering what the time frame was on that. Are they planning on this fall or next spring?
I believe next spring. To be honest with you, I'm not entirely positive. Let's see what it says here. Given the weather, I think we wrote it so that it would be next spring. I apologize for not having that date.
That's all right, Tom. I was just curious anyway. It'll be when it'll be.
Yeah, I think we left it open to them and we had it through next spring. If they were able to get, because they have a bunch of supplies and other things they have to procure. So we understood that and made it available to go into next spring so that it would have time to get that those materials in. And I can shoot you a response as well at after the meeting sometime.
Okay, Mike Taylor, you had a question.
Yes, per my email to Tom earlier today, I want to make sure we're not locked into $100 per hour for carpenters that they listed as the Davis-Bacon rate. We know that's not the rate. It's nothing like that. And I'm a little disappointed that they didn't give us a schedule of actual labor rates. And it should be clear that they're doing this on a time and material basis. We don't want to be locked in as a fixed price project. Rather, it should be time and material, and the labor rates should be the proper Davis-Bacon rates, and just for whatever hours they end up having to do. We know there's a lot of uncertainty on what will be involved here, so we're giving them, you know, flexibility there. We're not expecting them to tell us exactly what it's going to cost. But we do need to know what their billing rates are going to be and make sure that we're not locked into a bogus labor rate there. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. I have contacted them and asked them for clarification on their rates. As soon as I get a response, I'll let everyone know.
Okay, is that it on the library roof for now? Okay, looks like it. Last one I see here that we need to discuss is CY 2022. It would be a cloth mat, a face mask resolution would replace the current one that we have that's expiring on the 1st of October. Do we need any discussion on this? Anybody wants to talk about this? Council comment on this latest draft for replacing our mask resolution. Okay, Brittany, I saw you first. Go ahead.
Thank you. I don't have much to say except that I'll be voting in support of keeping this resolution around on next Monday's meeting. Thanks.
Mike, you got a comment?
Yes, echoing Brittany, I too will be supporting it. It's really important to keep this going so that we're encouraging our community to do what the state is also encouraging and all the public health authorities are encouraging. We've got to stick with this plan and until we've got a vaccine and we're developing enough herd immunity or something that the problem is going away. We're going to need this for a while. So thanks for working it up again and getting it on the agenda.
Shelley, go ahead.
I don't have anything to add except that I agree, and I'm glad to see it come back.
Okay, thanks, Shelley. I wanted to thank staff for reworking this resolution. I'm pleased with it. I'm very happy with it. It incorporated some concerns I had with the old one, even though I voted in favor of it, because I thought it was that important that we really build on the need to wear masks. And I think this is a much improved resolution. It covers some bases that wasn't covered before, and I'm going to support it as well on Monday. Any other comment? Okay, Karen, if we want to go back to the agenda, let me take a quick look at that. I think we covered everything that we needed to cover tonight. The only other thing I think that might be left is the little spreadsheet that we do at the end of all our work sessions. Shelley, did you have something?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. There was an email that went out about possibly adding a discussion of ditching, airport ditching, and PFAS. Is that going to be in your report on Monday? I wasn't sure what when the issue was going to be brought up.
Well, I had asked Tom to look into that. He had a response from Jesse Kyle's office, and that was shared among all the council. Is there more discussion that we need? Shelley? Okay, Shelley, is there some more discussion you're expecting on the PFAS issue that on the airport ditch that you're expecting? Because
oh yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor, I was in between muting on my phone.
You cut off, Shelley.
Okay, I think I'm unmuted now. I had questions about the work in the ditches and the impact it might have on the plume and whether disruption of the dirt would make. I don't know if PFAS is carried in dry dirt, but I just had some questions about that. Also, the Wilson Road degradation that may have with all of the trucks, and also it's just something that I would like to hear more about, perhaps on Monday in the mayor's report.
Shelley, if you're expecting me to do a bunch of research before Monday on mobilization of PFAS through dirt and water, I'm not sure I'm the person to do that.
Well, what about the degradation to Wilson Road and the possible increase in construction expenses that we may be facing?
Well, that's definitely a discussion this council should have. I'm not sure I'm the one to lead it. I think the new council is going to have to wrestle that with that one. All that works. Mike, you have something?
Yes, I think Shelley raises some good points here, and actually, any project of this type is supposed to have a health, safety, and environmental plan that addresses, that identifies any risks of the work, both for workers, for the community, and even for the environment, and then sets forth a plan for how they're going to control those risks. And if they haven't addressed the potential, any potential issues with PFAS, then they should do so, even if they have a means of determining that they're not going to cause any issue with that. Their plan should state why they believe that. And also, I think it's important for their plan to provide for traffic controls and any repairs necessary to Wilson Road, because the truck traffic may present significant traffic hazards and degradation of the road surface. So those are things the DOT really has the responsibility to do that, and they may be just trying to blow it off and ignore it. Thanks.
Okay, Tom, can you check back with DOT and see if they have this plan and see if we can get a copy of it, this hazard, this mitigation plan that they should?
That Mike sure, I do have a call in to DOT. Yeah, I did contact them several weeks ago, and I haven't got a copy of the plan. I was trying to get a plan through Senator Keel, Kyle, about it. As you saw in his reply, since this is an FAA-funded project, DOT was not going to do any work having to do with the ditch. When I talked to him about damages to the road, the response was, well, this is a, you know, a city road, construction vehicles run on it. They're not expecting any other damage than what normally would incur by similar traffic that is taking place currently. So I can bump this up to Mr. Schuler, who's the regional DOT guy, and see if I can get a copy of the plan maybe from him, and see if we can get some type of there's a term for it, assurances that any damages to our roads will be covered by the contractor who is doing the work. I should be able to get that out, get something back. I don't know if I'll get it by Monday, but I will send the follow-ups out tomorrow.
Okay, Karen, are we ready to go through your spread?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead, Karen.
Okay, so I'll just touch on the things that haven't already been touched on. Or it looks like there's some things on the placeholder. I just wanted to check in on the dog ordinance, if you guys wanted Brittany to continue to work on that draft at some point or keep it on the back burner. Or take it off.
Is there any interest in pursuing the dog? Oh.
Sorry.
Brittany, go ahead.
Sorry, Cal.
I was just going to say that I'm happy to continue working on it if the council would like, but I can keep it on the back burner if they would like as well.
Joe van der Zanden, go ahead.
Yeah, my opinion would be to take it off the agenda. I don't think it's much of an issue right now, and I don't know that we could resolve it anyway, so thank you.
Joe Clark?
I'd like to see it removed from the agenda also.
Just a reminder, this is not the agenda. It's just ongoing topics and projects that people have been working on.
Okay, I'd like to see it removed from the ongoing projects list.
Any other thoughts on the dog ordinance? Well, as far as the dog ordinance, in my opinion, you know, it's back burner at least until the next council, and then the next council may decide they don't want to deal with it at all. So, that's my view on it. Okay, Karen, anything else on there that we might need to talk about?
Well, this going back up to the Salmon River erosion, I guess maybe this might just wait till the new council, but we need to decide what to do about the driveway and parking over here, City Hall. I'm gonna just keep this on here until the next council and see what they want to do with it. Mike and Shelley, any news on the federal highway funds for trails?
Joe Clark, I saw your hand.
I haven't.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I have a question about the, I'll try again. I have a question about the road in front of City Hall. What is the formal name of that road? And is it on our road maintenance list? Does it go all the way out to the Parker residence? What's the situation with that road?
Tom, can you cover that for us real quick?
Yeah, I think Mike has the history on it, but I remember the plat when they did the survey last year, that is an access to City Hall. I don't believe it's a platted road. The residences have a different platted access, different than what is up there. Mike, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, Mike, go ahead.
Yes, that road was used a long time ago. I understand from Amy Yeomans that it was originally called Loggers Road. It's, you know, one of those things that was a track developed for some use far before we were a city. There is an easement across there. That's state land. And once you get right beyond City Hall, it's a state tract. But the state does have or has granted an easement along that route. And the Parkers use it to get to their house out of convenience because it's a little more direct than going out via Dolly Varden. So they... the city never adopted maintenance on that road. We only took over maintenance as far as City Hall, and we consider it the driveway to City Hall. Parker's acquired that sign and put it up, as I recall. There was no city approval of that as a city road or of that name as a city name. It does, unfortunately, conflict because we have another park. We have Parker Drive, and those two do get or can get confused. So there was always that issue around it, but we've always just treated it as the City Hall driveway. And if we want to reroute, say, a new road through Salmon River Park with a redesign of the park to our parking lot that doesn't use that route, we could and just abandon it. But we have no requirement to maintain it beyond City Hall.
Do we have any idea what their what physical address the Parkers use at that residence then?
I don't. There's a, and I've forgotten which road it is that ends up at, you know, that their house is, that's actually platted to their house in that subdivision. So, but I don't know specifically what they use as a physical address. They may use Parker Road because they I think, you know, take some pride in having their family name on their road or something. But, you know, people have been have informally used whatever physical address they wanted to use, Whale Holler or whatever, you know. And they aren't always tied to actual platted, you know, the actual platted road address. So it's kind of vague with regard to that, but we just maintained a City Hall, and if we don't need to maintain that route, if we use another one, we can do that.
When you say we don't need to maintain it, we have no plans to close it off or anything like that. Is that correct?
Well, I certainly don't, and there's an easement along there. So they have a right to use a public access easement since the state granted it apparently as a long usage. So we're not interested in, I mean, we have no reason to block off or suggest blocking off their access by that route. I'm just saying that we're not obligated to maintain it.
Thank you.
Shelley, I saw your hand up.
I was just going to respond to the issue about the proceeding with seeking federal funding for trails. Mike has been talking with some folks, and there's some, he may want to describe it more fully, but there's some real interesting ideas about trail plans in the future. But I'm thinking that we probably ought to, with all of the input we got from the community about the funding for the trail project, I think it might behoove us to have to develop a trail plan and to do that in a fairly systematic way, and perhaps over the winter see what we can come up with for the spring and then start looking for funding. But it looks like we should probably get community input. They were pretty vocal about the trail project.
So this is a different pot of money, though.
Can you get that, Karen?
What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be off mute.
Okay. Well, so what's going on with this project? What do you guys want? Do you want? Do I need to update what I have here, or are you saying that you want to put this on the back burner for now?
This Mike. Yeah, I think it's something we need to spend some time. Shelley and I are interested in, you know, maybe developing a local trails group to advocate for trails and help decide where they might be. I had a nice discussion with Hank Glenfer about trails, and he's interested in how TNC, that he works for, could cooperate with the city and to provide some expanded opportunities for people to hike, both on TNC lands and maybe on state lands. So I think there are a lot of opportunities there, but it's going to take us some time to maybe get together some folks who want to develop ideas and then come back to the city with some recommendations. It's not something we can do in the short order, and I think funding for trails is certainly not something that's going to fit into the CARES Act thing. Public didn't like the idea much, and as Cal pointed out, we don't really have time to contract any trail work between now and when the funding goes away anyway. So I think this is a long-term project, and I'm pleased to work with Shelley on it and anybody else who's interested.
Okay, so it's no longer a federal highway funds for trails project then. It's it'll just be something different working on trails.
Right. Well, yeah, who knows for sure where we'd probably look for all kinds of possible funding sources, and federal highway funds might be some of it. There might be bike trails. There might even be ATV trails somewhere. Hiking trails for sure. We've got ideas for some possible routes that people would like. But I think we need time to look at both what is it that we want to accomplish, and then where might we find the funds to do it. I think we're going to have to depend heavily on grants, and they may or may not be easy to get.
All righty, sounds good. Does Brittany want to give us an update on the food security during pandemic, seller and canned salmon?
I don't really have an update. I haven't spoken with any of the staff since our last meeting, so I can get together with Tom and Phoebe and see where we're at with that. I can send out an email tomorrow.
Okay. And then Cal, have we heard anything from DHSS?
No, I haven't heard anything back from that letter to DHSS, but the season is ending here soon, and I'm not sure what we would do.
Okay, and
since we don't have an attorney general anymore, I don't know that we would even get an answer right now.
Right. All right, and then something, Tom, did we hear anything about the DOT building getting taken care of?
The last thing we heard was a response to the mayor that said that they have to get it on their budget, and that they had concerns about making any repairs to it. I suppose the mayor could add any more to that. That's been a couple of months back.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I heard. They had to do a hazardous material survey, and then once that was done, then they had to find some additional funding to actually tear the thing down. So that's kind of where they're at. I am aware of Mike's testing that he did out there. But apparently they want to do their own. So that's kind of where we're at.
Okay.
Question?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, could I speak to the Economic Stabilization Task Force?
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. The Economic Stabilization Task Force met for the fifth and last time on August 20, and the report of that meeting, which was not hugely well attended, but still was useful, is on page 75 and 76 of your packet. And the one action item out of there was at the request of a couple of hospitality, visitor hospitality providers that we put in a CARES Act proposal for helping local businesses develop their websites to be in alignment with the recommendations to the Gustavus Visitors Association of the Cedar Marketing Group, i.e. how to address the independent traveler categories that they identified. So the we put together the website development proposal. It's on page 23 of your work packet. And you can go ahead, I think, and probably take Economic Stabilization Task Force off your spreadsheet, Karen, until the new council decides how they want to proceed with responding to the economic injury component of COVID-19. They could choose to continue some kind of an informal, they could formal finance special subcommittee of the council, or some other approach. So you can probably take that off your list unless Councilmember Clark and Vice Mayor Canmore want to continue with it. And I would just like to say my thanks to both of them for helping conduct these five conversations. And I'll leave behind all of the documents and recordings from the meetings. So thank you both. And that's it for that group.
Thanks, Susan. I guess the last thing on here is the census. It doesn't look like Gustavus has had a good response rate for the census. And I just wondered if Brittany would like to speak to that, since she was kind of the liaison for that with Barb at one point.
Sure, thanks. I recently just found out a little bit more information from one of the local folks who was hired by the Census Bureau. And it sounds like anybody who responded in Gustavus online, somehow there was some sort of glitch and it didn't get counted. So those census takers were going around to homes, even if they had already been there before. So the reports that we've been seeing may not be totally accurate. And that's as far as I know.
So are you saying that if we responded early to the census that online, that our response wasn't counted in the census or counted in the stats that people have been posting?
I'm not exactly sure. So it was Cheryl Smith, and I can get a hold of her. I just talked to her super briefly, but it sounded like it wasn't counted in the stats that people were seeing online. So I can look farther into that, but that's why a lot of people were going around town so late. Like, she was just at my house a week ago.
Oh, you cut out, Brittany.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just saying that I'm not exactly sure. I believe it's the stats that people were seeing, because I think that's what flows in first. Mm-hmm. But Cheryl Smith was just at my house 1 week ago. And I can get a hold of her and get some more thorough details if she has them.
Okay. It sure would be nice to know what the response rate is for Gustavus, because the funds are so important. To everybody who's here online, just spread the word and hopefully we'll get a good count. That's all I have.
Mike Taylor.
Yes, we understood from Cheryl that, I mean, we had had filed online, and she said that the problem in Gustavus was that it was a coding problem or something that that none of the online filings actually got counted. And so if you filed online directly, you need to redo it on a paper form or orally with her, if I understood right.
Well, if that's the case, then we need to get the word out, because for the census, whatever, whoever needs to get the word out, because I think a lot of people did that right away and have no idea that they haven't
exactly
been counted. And the deadline
is that's exactly the problem.
Weeks. I don't think anybody has any a clue that that is something that went wrong.
Well, that's something Cheryl could confirm if you check with her.
I was going to say that
Joe Clark, you had something?
I will go ahead and...
Yes, I know I filled mine out early on online, and then in that it said not to do it again, but the census taker came by and we did it again orally here in my home, and but I had no idea that the online portion was not counted. She didn't know either. And I cautioned her. I said, I don't want to do this twice. So if our residents don't know, did it online and don't know, that's something that really needs to get out there.
Brittany, you had something else?
I'm sending out an email now to my contact through the census bureau after Barb left, and I'll find out exactly what's going on and what the city can do. And I'll send out an email to Karen to distribute to the council.
Okay, that sounds
well, just to echo what Joe said, that's exactly what happened with me. I filled my one out online back in, I think, in June. I think somebody showed up in my driveway, and I kind of did the same interview with them in the driveway. So I was reading an article where they had all kinds of problems with this census thing, and mostly because of the COVID issues. And I don't think we're the only community that's having problems or that's had problems. I think this is more of a feature and not a bug of the program. Anyway, appreciate anything Brittany can do to find out more information. Karen, did we have anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, unless there's anything else, we're going to adjourn. It's 8:30, and we've been at this for 3 hours now, and I think we're about done. If there's any. Okay, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for hanging in, and we'll be talking to y'all on Monday.